listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 234 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where in today's episode, we are going to give you a preview of the 2019 DIY Musician Conference in Austin. But even if you can't make it to Austin, there will be plenty of goodness in this episode for you because we have the listener feedback and questions as always. And of course, joining me for this episode of the podcast is Chris Robley. Chris, how you doing?
I'm great. This weekend is Father's Day, my birthday, Harry Nilsson's birthday. Going to some concerts tonight. It's going to be an action-packed party weekend.
Wow. Big weekend.
And I mentioned Harry Nilsson just because I love him. So my lunch songs live this week, my live stream, is going to be Harry Nilsson songs.
Yeah, and I know you like to do shows where you feature his songs.
Yes, I do.
And by the way, I don't think I mentioned that I'm Kevin Bruner. I said Chris Robley's joining me, but if this is someone's first time to the podcast, they don't know who I am. I should not assume.
How humble of you to just assume that's not a given.
Chris, I just always assume nobody cares who I am.
Keeping it real.
Keeping it real. Lots of good stuff going on. I've actually been making some great progress on some new Small Town Poets guitar tracks I'm very excited about. Hopefully we'll be uploading some of those tonight. And our plan is to release a single ideally next month. But I'm holding us to it that once we have the master recordings, that's when we will map out a release. We're not going to be beholden to a particular day. I'm practicing what I preach here.
Taking your own advice. That's wise.
Let's see if I can stick to it. One thing I want to mention at the top of the podcast, we don't mention this a lot, but if you are listening to this podcast and you didn't know, the podcast is available everywhere you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, who I'm highlighting because they just made a major update to the Spotify platform. I think it just happened yesterday or the day before. But now when you open your Spotify app and you click on the library section, you will see at the top it says music, giant letters. It says music, and then it says podcasts. And so they are very much making a play on the podcast front. And they even signed some deal with the Obamas for some exclusive podcast content. But I highlight that as, you know, they are making some big moves to make it easier for you to listen to podcasts. And the DIY Musician Podcast is there. So if you are a Spotify user, that might be the easiest way for you to listen to the podcast. And, you know, they're starting to do things like they launched a new, personalized playlist that's supposed to mix in podcasts and music for your drive.
I saw that drive time playlist. Yeah.
So I just want to highlight that because I know a lot of folks that listen to this go to cdbabypodcast.com where you can listen to it from the website. And I know there's a lot of folks that listen from the Apple Podcast app, which you can. My favorite podcast app is Overcast. So there's lots of ways you can listen to it. And I know when we market the podcast out to folks, we typically send them to cdbabypodcast.com because it's hard to link to all these various places where people may be listening, especially apps that only exist on mobile devices. So I just wanted to throw that out there. If you're a Spotify user, they're doing some interesting things with podcasts. I know they bought a few podcast brands as well. So they're seeing that as a big piece of what their future looks like.
Every time you say that, I just keep thinking about the economics of it. But we can table that for a different discussion.
we don't do a lot of news coverage anymore. There's a lot on the podcast, but there are a lot of people that are thinking, is this, Spotify sort of moving away from the musician market and the music market and becoming more of just an overall entertainment portal? And what does that mean? Does that mean music is less important and so forth? They're looking for ways to drive engagement because, they're still not a profitable company. Lots of users, lots of revenue coming in, but still not profitable. So they got to figure that out. So in today's episode, we wanted to give you a preview of the 2019 DIY Musician Conference. And, you know, it's just around the corner. If you haven't heard and you're new to this podcast, the DIY Musician Conference is a conference we put on, CD Baby, we put on every year. This year, it's in Austin, August 16th through 18th in Austin, Texas, one of my favorite cities in the United States. And right now, tickets are just $129. At the end of June, that price is going up to $159. So we thought it would be good to give you this preview, maybe help you decide, get you, if you're on the fence, get you buying that ticket before the price goes up and you regret it. A couple quick highlights of the conference. First, I'd like to give a little bit about what our mission has been with this conference from the beginning. One, we wanted to make it super affordable for independent artists to attend. If you've been to any other conference, there's lots of great ones out there, but they typically run in the $600 to $1,000 range for a ticket. Our ticket price started at $99. Right now it's $129. The other thing is we're making this specifically for artists. I've been to a lot of conferences where there's great info on the business side and they try to cover some stuff for artists. And there's a lot of mixed audience, which typically means that it's less focused for the artist side. And so we wanted to make sure that this was geared specifically for independent artists to help them move their career forward. The other thing is we wanted to make sure that it is very actionable. The advice and the experiences you have there are very action-oriented. And the people that speak at our conference, we vet them very seriously. We don't just let anyone speak at our conference. We have them provide all the information they're going to present, the action items, and we want to know so that you are getting the best value for your money and also that you're getting the information that's really going to help you get out there and make a difference with your music career. So that if you didn't know that about our conference, I think that's important to throw that out there. That's kind of our core mission around what we're doing there.
Yeah, if I can just emphasize the second point you made, which is that it's tailored to the artists and not like a B2B, not a music industry thing. It's so important because there's so many conferences I've gone to and you know, sat in the audience and watched panel discussions or whatever, where, I mean, I would say 95% of the music events I go to are this kind of programming where it's like the distribution chain of Lady Gaga expert talks to like the publicist of Jay-Z, and you're like, okay, sweet. No, so you get all this stuff that's, you know, pertinent to to some, but you're like, this has nothing to do with my life. It has nothing to do with most musicians' life. And I don't know. It just drives me nuts that is the chief mode of content at so many conferences. Like, who cares about any of that?
Yeah. And that doesn't mean it's not interesting. Like, I can listen to those conversations and go, that was interesting. But at the end of the day, when I walk out of the room, there's nothing that I can take from it that I can do anything with. So that's one of the key things that we do. Also, I've been to so many conferences where the information by said expert who hasn't really engaged with independent artists is just giving really bad advice to people like, you should do everything in your power to go get signed. I still hear stuff like that. And it just drives me crazy that you're just giving bad advice because you don't even know what you're talking about. And
well,
so,
yeah. And those types of people and those kinds of discussions, like you're saying, aren't devoid of value. It's just that those people they've lost so much perspective about the kind of, you know, the working class sort of approach to music making that, you know, they have such a power of scale or whatever you'd want to call it, that like whatever advice they have really generally only applies to people at that echelon.
Correct. Yeah. And that's some of the marketing advice I see on some of those sessions. It's like, well, we did this brand partnership with Lady Gaga that really made the difference. Well, unless you're Lady Gaga or Beyonce, that doesn't apply because you don't have that leverage or that star power and celebrity in order to garner those types of deals. So, again, it could still be interesting. It's just nothing, not information we can do anything with as independent artists. So that sort of like cast a vision of a mission for what we're trying to do. If you haven't been to the conference, you can check out all the details at DIYMusicianCon.com and see, you know, get your tickets and all that stuff there. I'd like to move into a little bit of like highlighting what's different this year than what we've done in the past. So this year, like I said in the promo video for it, it's in Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas. That's true. You know, they really live by that down there. I don't know if Austin really leans into that, but if you're in Dallas, they truly do live by that.
Well, Austin's supposed to be weird, right? So maybe it's just weirder than other places.
Austin is like the warm Portland. So we do have far more sessions this year. And one thing that we did is sort of creating some, you know, looking at the experience and what we wanted to create. Every conference that we've done to date, I felt, you know, really good about. This year, we wanted to break it up a little bit and provide some balance across, you know, all the different themes, three main themes, I should say, that people might be interested in. So we really broke it down into make, market, and monetize. And I wouldn't call it a track because it's not like you have to choose a track and that's what you have to do. But what we're really trying to do is just highlight, you know, that there's some creative content, like some content where you're going to learn more of the creative process. Then there's the marketing stuff. And then, you know, just understanding distribution and your monetization options and all that. So we really have got three solid buckets of where everything's falling into. And I'm pretty excited about that.
Indeed. I'll just give you an indeed.
And a few other things that we have this year, we said that we were going to do. There's more performance opportunities than we've ever had at a DIY musician conference. We've got this great venue. You can go search it online, check out their website. It's called Cheer Up Charlie's. It's just a few blocks away from the Austin Hilton where all the conference stuff is happening. But at Cheer Up Charlie's, there's two stages. There's an outdoor stage, a big outdoor stage, and a cozier indoor stage. Both of them sound great, and it's just this whole cool complex that we're going to have every night. It's almost like a mini festival ground. It's really cool. It's one of my favorite venues in Austin. But we've got the whole thing, so it'll be the landing spot every night. And every night, we've got open mic opportunities. We've got some showcase opportunities. A lot of the open mic slots, you know, we had, if you got that early bird ticket, you've got, you know, that was when the opportunity to submit for the early open mic slots. There will be open mic slots available night of, so you'll just have to show up and put your name in the hat. But we're going to be there every night, and it's just going to be a great landing spot because, like I said, it's almost like a little mini festival ground. So if you just want to hang out and chat with other attendees, there's areas to do that where you don't have to, you know, feel bad because you're talking while someone's playing. It's lots of areas outside.
Yeah, I was just going to say, too, in years past, people have been, in advance of the conference, have been uncertain what an open mic entails, and they think, oh, well, I don't play an acoustic guitar, so maybe I don't qualify. Chances are you do. We've had people hop on stage and play to tracks. Is there, I assume there's some kind of backline, right?
Yeah, we provide backline.
So, you know, there's other opportunities besides just person with acoustic guitar at this open mic.
Yeah, we've had, you know, hip hop artists get up and just plug in their laptop and have their tracks ready to go and really throw down. We've had, you know, the typical acoustic guitar thing, like you mentioned, but we've had full bands as well. It's usually two songs, but we make it so it's easy to swap people in and out. And we've sort of have a process dialed in for that. So yeah, don't think it's just, oh, I'm not a singer songwriter doing a song in the round kind of open mic thing. It is, there's lots of options. The other thing is, so that's Cheer Up Charlie's. Every night we're going to be there. It's such a cool spot. They usually have food trucks on the property. And like I said, it's a great place to just hang out. They have great drinks there as well. They have one called the Vegan Yeti, and it was delicious. It was like, I think supposed to be like a white Russian with coconut milk instead.
Oh, you told me about that. That does sound really good.
That it was dangerous because I could have, you know, I could have had a gallon of that stuff. But they've got great drinks and it's just a fun environment. And I know it's going to be a good spot. Every night we've got it, which is in the past we've sort of done different locations, but every night that's just the landing spot and you can start your evening there and spend a good portion of it there. Another thing that is really exciting is that Shure, they were there last year. They are back again and they are going to be hosting a daytime open mic room at the conference. And they did something similar last year, but this year will be more official, like sign up to perform. And it'll be a room where people will be hanging out, performing, and you can listen to other people and get your chance to play. And they're doing some cool stuff with that. And of course, there's our jam room, which is always a highlight. It's always fun to see what beautiful chaos is going on in there.
The best thing about the jam room is that it requires that one brave person to sort of kick something off, and like could be a dude with a flute just playing some riff, or it could be someone with a guitar who starts playing a song that everyone knows. Could be anything. And then it just takes that one crazy lunatic to start something, and then the other folks jump in, and 5 minutes later there could be 25 people singing Hey Jude.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's funny you say that, because it's definitely one of those things, like Friday morning, it's like people kind of looking around, is anything going on in there? And one person might be just kind of noodling on their guitar in the corner. And then by Sunday at the end, it's like half the conference is in there.
Right.
Folks have warmed up and met a few people. And
yeah, I mean, this might be implied by just the term jam room. But I love going in there for, you know, a few minutes at a time and just observing the kind of, I don't know what you say, the dynamics of who's making decisions versus being collaborative. Like, not in any kind of bad way, but it's sort of like, in order to have this large group jam, like you do need some people who step out and take some kind of role in shaping the chaos and yet keep everyone included enough. Where I love watching all that happen. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's very collaborative every time I've been in there, and very welcoming. It's never been a thing where there's like three super musicians just kind of like showing off and expecting everyone to just kind of like sit there and listen to them. So it's fun. And even, you know, even if you don't play an instrument, vocalists get in there and start singing and doing all sorts of cool stuff as well. So that's always a highlight. Some other things that we have going on this year, mentoring, we're doing a little different. You know, there's been people in the past of like, oh, it's I can't get the mentor at the time I want. And so you can actually go and reserve that when you buy your ticket. You can reserve your mentorship slot. Then we're also going to have song listening sessions where you can sign up to have a professional listen to your song and give you feedback. That's something that people have asked for. We haven't really officially done in the past, but that's something that we're doing this year. And hopefully that's good.
Yeah, I think that'll be really awesome.
You know, I don't know that I'm necessarily qualified to be the one to listen to people's songs, and I'm sure I won't be one of them. But I'm always curious when someone asks me to listen to their song, like what they want me to say.
Or beyond what they want you to say, what do they want you to do? Like, what's their motivation to even have someone listen? Is it to get feedback so they can improve in the future, to get feedback so they can improve that particular song or recording? Or is it like, because they want validation? And I don't think any of those are right or wrong. It's just interesting. You never quite know where someone's coming from. Maybe that should be a part of this. I don't know if it is, like, have the person say what they're looking for.
This is being organized by people who have done this before, so we'll see.
Smarter people than us, yeah.
Smarter people than us, but that will be something that you can do there. And we're also doing, you know, the studio session like we've been doing in Nashville. It'll be a different studio, obviously, but we found a studio in Austin, so you can sign up also to take part in that, and that's a separate sign-up that you need to check out that we'll be emailing ticket holders about, because space is very limited.
And basically, is it working the way it has in the past, where there will be a band that is actually in a recording session and you get to kind of sit in and watch the production happen?
There will be a recording session happened, and with, I don't know if it will be a band or session musicians. We're trying to locate a band, but still working out some of those details. If you've got a ticket, you might see an opportunity come your way in order to take part in something like this, if your whole band is attending or if you're in the Austin area. Yeah, so just, I think, lots of great things going on this year. One of my favorite things is just being there with so many like-minded people, even working in the industry. My day job, it's not like there's lots here at CD Baby. It's not like there's, you know, a big group of artists in the office. I mean, there are artists who work here, but it's not like we're just hanging out talking about music stuff. We've got jobs.
We're all doing our job, right?
So it's just amazing that when we walk into the conference, myself personally as an artist, how refreshing it is just to be with so many like-minded people. I think people underestimate what kind of impact that has on your psyche for what you're doing with your life.
Yeah. And it's, you're going to be with 1,500 or however many attendees of folks that don't think you're nuts for pursuing music.
Yeah, just like you've heard me say, we all have that those voices that tell us we're making huge mistakes with our life. These are the voices that are telling you that you're doing the right thing. You're pursuing your musical passions is the best thing you could possibly be doing with your life. And so it's refreshing to be in that that crew of people that that get you. And it's, I think one thing that I love is the diversity, that there's people from all sorts of genres. There's people from all over the United States and other countries. We typically have representation about 15 different countries in it. You know, there's people from Europe, people from Latin America, sometimes people from Asia. So it's really a cool opportunity just to connect with people that have different perspectives as well, and open your eyes to different types of music, different ways to pursue a music career and all that. So it's, that's one of the highlights.
Yeah.
That was kind of like the big breakdown of the event. Again, you can check out all the details at DIYMusicianCon.com and definitely pick up your ticket before the end of June because the price does go up. So take care of that business. I put down some things that I'm personally looking forward to, like some specific things. And I'm assuming you did the same, Chris.
I did.
All right. Well, let's get into that, and I'll let you start because I've been talking a lot.
All right. So I think the first thing I'm excited about, for a few reasons, I really like the people at Indiepreneur, which is Kyle and Corinne, I think, or at least they're the most sort of visible people from that company. And they are going to be there on Friday and doing, I think they're calling it a digital marketing deep dive. And it's three classes or three sessions throughout the course of the day, which I think is really cool. It's basically, is that the first time we've done something like that?
Yeah.
There might have been a songwriting thing last year that spanned two sessions. But like, this is kind of like, if you're into this topic, you can really get into it and like go from, beginner 101 into really like more advanced stuff. And it's, I think the gist of it, it's about building your audience and segmenting your audience using social ad platforms and using Facebook ads to reach total strangers and then, you know, impress them, get them a little bit deeper into your music and stuff. And then finding a way to, you know, milk that for what it's worth, whether that's kind of monetizing it through selling them something or maybe getting them to subscribe to your list or whatever. But I see them sort of having the time and space at this conference to really lay out the details of a strategy, which is exciting for me that they have that scope over three sessions to do that. And I was also going to say, it'll just be cool to hang out with them because, you know, you and I have both been chatting with them a bunch online.
Yeah, this was actually one of the top things on my list as well. As you mentioned, and we've talked about on the podcast, a lot of the stuff we've done on Facebook with tests of various things with our bands and our musical projects has been learnings that we've gained from the Indiepreneur crew. We do subscribe to their service and they've got so many great tutorials and marketing, very, very in-depth marketing advice and training. And, I think all of October last year, every night at like 11 to midnight, I was going through those courses and watching videos and learning and adjusting my ads based on what I was learning. So I love how they really get down into it. And one of the things that pieces of feedback we've gotten from past attendees is that on certain topics, we might hit the basics or we might hit an it more advanced, but wanting to have the ability to have, you know, sort of a progression and have like, oh, I get the intro and now I want the advanced, more advanced stuff now that I understand what we're talking about. So that's what we're trying to do with Indiepreneur Crew.
Well, I think it was called Digital Marketing Deep Dive, but then each of those sessions has, you know, like a separate subtitle.
Yes, that is correct. It's Indiepreneur Digital Marketing Deep Dive. And the first one is track, measure, and grow your fan base. The next one is from zero to 10,000 fans. And the next one is an automated, profitable fan-generating machine. Those are all things I'm very interested in.
I'm interested in fan-generating machines.
I am too. That
sounds good. Let's build one.
Sounds like the future. No, and I love how they, you know, like we were talking at the top of the show, topics of like how to go from zero to 10,000 fans. And I will say sometimes in the music world, we see these kind of things and it sounds pretty, you know, they'll say, get a Twitter account, get an Instagram account. We're like, thanks a lot. That was real helpful. Now, this will be really great, actionable advice that really works.
You know, it's just occurring to me. I wonder if they're going to address this or if it's even why they chose the number. But, you know, there's a lot of bad advice marketing, music marketing gurus out there who have programs that are based around like get 10,000 fans overnight or whatever. And a lot of those strategies end up just killing your organic reach because you're basically getting click farm type activity. This is not, I can guarantee that the strategy they're going to outline is not that, because they are very vocal. What's the critics of that kind of approach? And so I'm thinking they probably picked 10,000 just so they could make the point that those other approaches to getting 10,000 fans are all BS.
Probably so.
Yeah. We'll see. And if not, now they can work that little insult into their speech.
Everything that I've seen them produce as far as marketing content has been rock solid and so good. They also have a podcast you can check out called Creative Juice. It is more on the marketing nerd side. So you prepare your brain. You might want to take notes when you're listening to that podcast where, you know, our podcast, Chris and I, this is just driving fun entertainment.
Way to undersell us there.
That's right. I did receive an email last night of someone who was critical of us. And so anyway, moving on. Let's see. Well, my number one thing was the same as what you said. So what's your next one?
Number two, I had the talk that Mike Warner and George Goodrich are going to give about playlisting and how to get your music onto playlists. And, you know, both of them have been friends of CD Baby and conference attendees. And I just like them as people. So I'm interested what they'll do together on stage to talk about a topic they both know a ton about.
Yes, indeed. That's going to be good. And I had lunch with Mike not too long ago, and we'll probably see him again coming up. He doesn't know this, but I'm going to San Diego. Mike, I'm coming to San Diego in July. So maybe we can hook up. But yeah, those guys are good guys. And I think that they have some new takes and some interesting takes on playlisting beyond just this is playlisting and this is how it works. And so, yeah, I think they have some really good information to share. My next highlight is that there will be someone from Facebook there. There will be people from YouTube there. There will be someone from Spotify there. And to me, the thing that why that's important is every time that they come, I know YouTube has been, I think this will be their third year. Every time those companies come, they always walk away going, wow, I had no idea the independent artist community was this vibrant, was this talented, was, you know, this excited to learn and was doing so many cool things. And you might take that as an insult, but I don't, because a lot of these folks have either come through the tech industry or come through the major music industry and have not really, truly understood what it really means to be an independent artist these days. And when they see how big the community is and how excited and talented and just amazing it is to be there, they just go back to those places they have come from and just sing your praises. I have seen this with YouTube. In fact, that YouTube was like one of the main things why we're sponsoring and why we want our people there is so they can talk to your artist and they're going to have office hours. And part of it is, their main focus a lot of times is not just to pass on information, but to learn. And to me, that is super exciting. And we've come a long way in the independent artist community when I see that happening. And so this is the first time that someone from Facebook has presented. They're going to be talking about Facebook and Instagram. But I hope that they have that experience as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes back to the whole reason that this podcast exists in a way is that there are countless ways to be vibrant in your own music making and to have legitimate careers or legitimate creative pursuits that because they are, like under the radar, they go unnoticed by the people who judge success by huge metrics. But yeah, so I completely agree. It's good for these people to be either made aware or reminded that success and just happy, healthy music making is very diverse. It's not just about having a big hit.
Yeah, and also that you can have amazing music that is just on its own, without any metrics, just purely amazing. You can have an artist that's amazing, doing very cool things, and it doesn't matter if there are metrics or not. Those things aren't necessarily completely tied together. And I think you see that and you go, there's a lot of people in this community making amazing music, and they're perfectly fine having a day job and just playing gigs on the weekends and putting the music out too. They're trying to, expand a fan base, but they're not expecting what the traditional industry would have assumed as what you must have in order to be considered successful. And I think they see that and understand that creating music is different than the music machine. And creating good music can be different than what we've seen from the music machine. And it's just right there in front of them, so diverse and so much talent. It's really impactful. So that's exciting to me because you don't know how, if you've been listening to this podcast a long time and been a part of the CD Baby community, you don't know how much since we started behind the scenes, how much the conference has influenced conversations with some of these people that have come and seen it going, oh my gosh, I had no idea. We've been working with you guys forever and I had no idea this is what it meant. So that's always exciting to me.
Yeah. If I can just do my next one, because I think there's a good segue there. I'm excited to, at this conference, have a bit of a focus on it being okay for you to continue with your day job and manage your life and have a family and be a healthy individual while also having the freedom or the finances or whatever your kind of day job affords you to then make the music you want to make. So there are two sessions, I think, on Sunday that are related, I think, more to applying the skills you learn or exercise in your day job to your music career, as well as maybe, budgeting and things like that. The kind of like, what would you call that? Home economics or something of having a day job and a music career at once. And then I'm pretty sure me and Tony Van Veen are going to be doing a talk too that's a little bit more on the like artistic mental health kind of side of that discussion. But there seems to be some focus on that, which I think is a good thing for artists to, rub up against and realize it's okay to. You have permission to keep your day job.
Yeah. Yeah. There's two sessions outside of the one that you're going to be a part of where that's going to be some of the discussion. There's one called Make Your Passion Your Paycheck, the Mindset to Leave Your Day Job. And then there's another one called Being a Creative in a 9-to-5 World. It's okay to have a day job. So I think those are two things that we see artists struggling with a lot, where like, when's the point when it's okay to jump in and leave my job and kind of step out? It's a little scary at times. So I think there's a session about that. And then, the idea of like, it's okay. there are some serious benefits to having a day job. In fact, some of my the most fun and I think rewarding shows I've done with Small Town Poets have been as of late because I have a day job and I'm less concerned about the financial implications of everything, of whether or not we made money or lost money that night, that really can rob the joy out of what you're trying to do. And sometimes there's that piece that you realize, oh, you know what? My job allows me the creative freedom. And, you know, I want this to grow and build fans and be a business. But at the same time, I want it to still have that joyous experience of creating music, because if it doesn't have that, what am I doing?
Exactly. So, yeah, that is so right. And I think many, many musicians who have day jobs look at themselves in a negative lens, but they're not, you know, they're not valid. They're not real musicians until they're full-time professional musicians. But that's nonsense. Like, for all the reasons you just mentioned, like, you can keep the joy. You might actually have more money to invest in your music. And your music can be exactly what you want it to be when you're freed up of some of those concerns about every little decision you're making, you know, putting food on your table.
Yeah, exactly. One thing that I'm excited about to see how it goes down this year is we are doing a song pitching session that's going to be in the Shark Tank style.
Oh, interesting.
It's something that has been done before somewhere else. I'm trying to pull up the info about it right now, but it is, yes, it's Gary Earle, who he's out of Nashville. He's written an enormous amount of songs for film and TV, specifically for film and TV. He's doing another session about writing for film and TV that I think will be good. But he has been a part of this Shark Tank style song pitching session. And, you know, we're going to do that and see how it goes. So the idea is that it's a little bit more critical feedback. We are going to have Bob Boylan back from NPR. From everything that I've heard so far, is he's coming back. And he is going to do a similar song pitching session, which has been great because we've had artists get some pretty big success opportunities based on their participation just in that session alone.
Yeah, I mean, but, I know at least two, maybe three artists in the past who he's heard songs during that pitch session have ended up on the following week's episode of All Songs Considered.
Yes, and have had some pretty big, sizable breaks just from their participation in that session. That session has been generally very positive. Like, songs get people submit songs in advance. Where I think the Shark Tank session is a little bit more out of the box. Someone throws up a song from the audience, and they give, you know, a little bit more critical feedback. That doesn't mean they're looking to be mean or rude, but the idea that it could be pretty raw in the sense that a track could be something that's not ready for prime time and they're going to let you know. So, and what it's useful. But the difference being that, you know, like someone like a Bob Boylan, he's looking for different things. And the Shark Tank one is supposed to be just music supervisors for film and TV, looking for things that they would actually use and giving feedback on that. So, there might be some similarities to those sessions, but I think the more the better, because it gives more people the chance to pitch a track and get feedback and be willing to do it in front of all their peers.
Yeah. Let's see. The next thing I had that I was looking forward to is Rick Barker's talk. And actually, to be honest, until this morning, I actually didn't even know what he was talking about. I had just been a fan of his last two talks. One he did about Facebook live streaming, and the other one was about Facebook ads. And I thought he did a good job. He's good at he's a convincing, you know, advocate, I guess, for independent musicians. And afterwards, both times he gave talks, he was swamped at the table with people, that wanted to talk to him. And he graciously hangs around and talks to everyone he can. And so I was just excited for whatever he had to talk about. This morning I saw it on the schedule that it's about monetizing your Instagram account.
That one's going to be a good one. I'm looking forward to that one as well. And I will say that, Rick is out there and has lots of courses, but I know Rick, and I know he spends a lot of time educating himself. He actually spends a lot of personal money going to like Facebook, you know, like boot camps and things where you have to go place, and it's a very small group where they, you know, give you a lot of one-on-one help understanding these platforms. And so he really knows his stuff. It's not someone who's just, you know, taking a couple glances at the web and throwing out stuff to musicians. He really dives in and educates himself with, you know, the experts out there so he can help independent artists. And, you know, he manages artists as well. So he does it to pass on information to other artists, but he also does it to the benefit of the artists that are on his roster. So I think that one is going to be really good. He always has great information that's like super up to date. And so, yeah, he'll be there talking about Instagram, and that's a good one.
Yeah, the cool thing about at least his past 2 years sessions is that it's very case study heavy, which I think is a really good thing in this context, because basically he can walk you through how someone or how he set up a campaign sort of from start to finish, and what they were working with when they began the thing, and what the end results were. And it's that kind of detail that we were talking about with entrepreneurs. Like, you get to kind of, yeah, just see the minutia of building something. And I assume he'll probably take a similar approach to this Instagram knowledge.
The last highlight that I was going to mention is that we're trying something very new this year, and we're going to have some content in Spanish.
Oh, right. Katie's doing that, right?
Yeah, and some of our Spanish speakers here at CD Baby. It's something I wanted to try last year, but the timing wasn't right, and it was something that we weren't sure we'd have enough rooms for and all that stuff. But being that we're in Texas and right by Mexico, we thought there might be more folks than we've seen in the past that speak Spanish, and that being maybe their first language. And so I'm super excited to provide some content in Spanish, and I hope it goes well, because there is no conference that I've been to in the U.S. ever that has done this. And I think it's very important. And, you know, we do our conference in Valencia, Spain, and we've had a track of that in Spanish. And so, some, you know, Katie was there, Katie Long, and she's going to be speaking at this conference as well. She speaks fluent Spanish.
And she's a music publicist by day. So I'm assuming, are her talks related to PR?
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah. And it's a very good talk. I saw the English version in Valencia. And so I'm really excited about that. I hope that goes well. I hope that, you know, we're so close to Mexico, and I know we do get some folks from Mexico coming to the conference at times. I'm hoping this is something that makes them feel more welcome. And, you know, I know that if I was bilingual, which I'm not, although I haven't been learning Spanish, I'm trying my hardest. I've been doing lessons every night on Rosetta Stone.
Oh, I've got Duolingo, but I go through spurts where I'm like really good for about a month, and then I drop it for 2 or 3 months and forget half of it.
Well, for work, I'm going to Mexico City next month, and then we've been doing this conference in Spain, so I'm like, it's time. You know, I grew up in San Diego, which is right on the border. And so I'm familiar with some words, but I'm like, it's time I finally stop being embarrassment and only knowing one language, and I learn another language. You know, I understand, like, when you're, if the idea of, you know, even if you're fluent in two languages, it's nice just to hear some content in your first language. And so we're hoping that that's something that makes people feel welcome and helps them.
I'm laughing because I'm remembering this year in Valencia, that you and I stepped into a cab or an Uber late one night to head back to the hotel, and the driver knew we didn't speak hardly any Spanish at all. And yet he insisted on speaking to us in Spanish the entire time. Like, basically, he was trolling us, I think. I mean,
I think he was.
But it was hilarious. But also, next year, now we'll be a little bit more prepared. We'll understand every 10th word.
Yeah, I've actually been listening. Duolingo has this amazing podcast that I just discovered that it tells these intriguing stories, and there's a person that does some contextual narration in English, but then the person's talking in Spanish. And the idea is that as you're learning Spanish, it's just helpful to hear people's voices and hear them talking so you can start picking out words and stuff. But if the English person provides context, so you can at least know what world you're even talking about. Yeah. So That was a total side note. So by August, I'm going to be so fluent in Spanish. You guys won't believe it. So that was my last one. I just think that's something that's really cool and important is we try to, like we said at the mission at the beginning, trying to be diverse. We try to get lots of representation of different gender and ethnicities involved in the conference. You know, it's the music business has had a bad reputation, a deserved bad reputation of being mostly white men. And I've been to conferences where it's just like panel after panel after panel of just all white guys. And you're like, what is going on here? Because I look at the music community and that's not what it looks like. So that's been something that's been very important for us as well. And it's a challenge. I don't say that we get it perfect, but we do really, really strive to be an instrument of change in that area.
I just had one more thing on my list, which I'll say quickly, which is Simon Tam is giving two talks, I believe. And we've mentioned him a lot he actually has been a guest on this podcast, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. I probably need to have him back though.
He's got really good creative kind of, they seem like oddball suggestions sometimes, in terms of creative marketing. But they're always based in like, you know, the foundations of marketing. They just happen to be unique. And so along those lines, he's giving a talk called Social Media Hacks That Defy Trends. So I'm not sure where he's going to go with it, but I'm sure it'll be awesome because his talks in the past have been amazing.
Yeah, that was one of the ones last year that people were just raving about. Like all weekend long, I just kept, man, that was the best. Just that session alone made this whole trip worth it. I'm like, wow, I wasn't able to. I think I was speaking on something at the same time. Maybe we were doing our podcast. I can't remember. Anyway, I went back in the recording of that room right when he was about to start speaking, the hard drive ran out of space. And so I didn't get to hear it. So those are some of our highlights, some of the things that we want you to know about the conference. We think it is well worth your time and money and energy to come to Austin, to be with all the artist community, to really invest in yourself as an artist and get away from your normal day-to-day life for just a few days to really just say, this is important. My music career is important. And I'm going to, you know, block out everything else for a weekend and just focus on this. It's so helpful. And we hope to see you there. DIYMusicianCon.com. Get your tickets. And I should also say that I believe our hotel block is really, really filling up and almost full. So you want to get in on that as soon as possible as well. There's lots of other hotels in the area if that one fills up. But it's going to be a really cool spot. I should have mentioned that because this is one of my, probably the last thing that I'm really looking forward to is that this hotel is finally what we've been wanting from the beginning in the lobby that just has a lot of places to sit and hang, all sorts of different tables and chairs. There's a Starbucks, a real Starbucks in the lobby. There's a really cool bar. There's a taco shop. And then there's a full service restaurant all right there in the lobby. And it's just going to be such an amazing place to hang the whole weekend some of that energy is just the best part of it.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, DIYMusicianCon.com. Go get your tickets and let's move on to some listener questions. And we have a couple calls and an email. So let's do a call and then an email and then a call.
It's very balanced of you.
Very balanced. Let's start with this one.
Hi, my name is Ryan. I just became a fan of the podcast very recently. It was recommended by one of my professors, music business professors, and I was just listening to your latest episode about the set list. And so I'm actually new to the cover gig circuit, and I feel that it's going to take me a while to learn all these songs by heart. So I was wondering what your guys' thoughts was on having an iPad or something to have the lyrics and the chords in front of you. Is that unprofessional? Is that appropriate? Does it depend on the venue? I'd like to hear you guys' thoughts. Again, my name is Ryan, and thank you guys so much.
All right, thanks for the call, Ryan. Chris, what do you think?
Okay, so I'm sure there will be exceptions to this rule that I'm going to now pronounce to the world, but don't use an iPad. And I say that because I don't think, honestly, I've ever seen a performer use one that gave their all. Like, a lot of times when I see people using them, they're kind of like phoning in their set, or, you know, that's at worst, I guess. And at best, they're still paying enough attention to it that it's like it's sapping some kind of energy in the performance. So yeah, I've never been convinced that people that need them give a great performance. And now, having said that, I'm sure like hundreds of people will call and tell me I'm a jerk and I'm totally wrong and I should loosen up. But I also just, I think it kind of looks lame too. So that's my take.
I'm in mostly agreement with you. I think that, yeah, it does give the perception that you're just someone sitting in the corner just playing through some charts, and that it does look less professional in my opinion. However, Ryan knows the kind of gigs he's getting better than we do, just based on the information we have. And it may be a situation where if you can not make it a crutch where your face is in it and it just looks like, you know, you're disengaged from the crowd, that it might be something that can be helpful, or, you know, but it does give off a vibe. I'd be curious to see if there's people that listen to the podcast that are using it, because there are some tools that people might be using from an iPad, like Tracks, that enhance the performance.
That's true. That's true. I mean, which is why I made the caveat at the beginning that there are exceptions. But, you know, like, and I know like Michael Stipe from REM and plenty of like big artists have teleprompters. It's just, you can't see those. So we're forgiving them. But I also worry about the crutch part of it, because I think that the more you lean on a notebook full of lyrics, or the more you need an iPad with the lyrics, the less incentive you'll have, just simply through just being in an emergency of memory, to ever commit the stuff to memory. So you'll always need the iPad, as opposed to, I don't know, like I was saying, like, just don't play a song live until you've played it 100 times in your bedroom, or be okay with not of winging it like I do sometimes. But
well, that I agree with. Yes, I think that if you start the precedent of I'm just going to use this thing, that it's too easy to keep using it. So it's one of those things that if it's a tool to help you get through maybe a gig that you've got an opportunity that came up and it pays well, and you know, you aren't going to have time to memorize all the songs before it, if it's a tool that helps you get through that and helps you start building a larger repertoire that you have by memory, I could be for it. But if it's just something that you're like, oh man, that's too hard to memorize all that stuff, now I'm just going to keep using this, I think in the long run, you will wish you had memorized everything. Because I think it allows you to grow as a performer if you're not reliant on that thing.
Yeah. Now I'm realizing I'm a hypocrite, because actually I did a Halloween show 2 years ago.
I actually
had lyrics, printed lyrics on a stand in front of me, because I had basically decided to cram 30 monster and Halloween related songs into a set. There were some murder ballads too, but anyways, it was like, it was an impossible task. And so I leaned on the crutch, but I've done it once.
An iPad's just the new paper, so you did the exact same thing.
I know. That's why I'm a hypocrite.
But you know what? I think you raise a valid distinction there, though. There is no need for someone to memorize 30 monster songs, at least not many reasons that I can think of.
Unless that was a year-round Halloween act.
Yes. So in that case, it's like, I don't think the expectation from the people in attendance would be expecting you to have 30 Halloween songs memorized either. So that to me would be a distinction from that, compared to like how you like to do like evenings of Harry Nilsson covers, or covers that enhance, like you've said in the last episode, songs that you respect and enjoy the artist and sort of lean into as influences. That's a difference.
Yeah, totally. So I'm not a hypocrite.
We'll let you slide this time. All right, let's get to the email. Hi, Kevin and Chris. My name is Tobias. I'm a singer-songwriter, trailhead from Berlin. You answered a few of my questions in your podcast already, and I appreciate your help and insight a lot. You guys are doing the good work. Thank you. Before I come to my question, I would like to also thank you for making clear in one of your previous podcasts that pineapple on a pizza is one of the great wrongs humanity is capable of. It has always puzzled me why people would find that combination of food not only acceptable, but even enjoyable. I'm glad you made an official announcement of that, an official announcement that it is not. Now for my three questions. I know it's quite a lot, so please feel free to choose only one if there's no time for all three. Question one. During my last crowdfunding campaign, one of my rewards was writing a personal song for someone. The song turned out so good that I'm considering releasing it officially. The person who purchased the song would be very happy about that, but I'm not yet sure how to approach ownership of the song. I completely wrote the song myself, but in a way, she paid me to write it. So does she theoretically own the copyright? No fine print or rules regarding the ownership were made during the crowdfunding campaign, and I'm wondering how you guys would view this matter. I'll go ahead and read the other two questions, and then we can hit them one by one. Question number two would be to Chris about his live streaming. What kind of internet connection do you use? My biggest issue is video quality. As for setup reasons, I cannot use a LAN cable connection. And then question three, it's about payment of co-writers, co-master owners through CD Baby. Is there a possibility to have all involved owners of a track paid automatically by CD Baby? Or do all proceeds always go to the person through whose account the song gets distributed and he or she then would have to pay all the others manually? Thanks so much for all your work, for sharing your knowledge, and for inspiring us along the way. Best from Berlin, Tobias. And I follow Tobias on Instagram, so I know what he's up to.
Yeah.
He's doing his whole Camino video thing.
A lot of hiking that guy does.
Yes, he does. Well, that's why he goes by Trailhead.
Yeah.
So question one, during this crowdfunding campaign about ownership, I would say in that situation, I would say, you know, he's free and clear as far as ownership is concerned, especially if there wasn't any fine print. But that's a good point that you should probably put that in there if you're doing these kind of crowdfunding campaigns and where you can write a song specifically for somebody. I would say your fan has probably no intention or idea that that would even be an issue. So I would, in this case, say that you're fine. I would contrast that with what Small Town Poets did, what we did in our crowdfunding campaign, where we recorded somebody's song and somebody paid us, I think it was $1,000 to record their song. And, in that, we probably should have had a little bit more fine print.
Fine print, yeah.
On what the outcome would be. I think we did say whether or not they could release it. I think we said they could post it online and give it out, but they couldn't distribute it as a Small Town Poet song. But, you know, this is where it probably would have been better to even go even further. But anyway, that song, they gave us a song. And there was some lyrical lines that we thought were rough around the edges. So we changed a few lines. We improved some of the chord progressions. We made some adjustments to it. Enough that it should have been a co-write, but again, it wasn't distributed. This was, you know, a fan-funded campaign, and I don't think anyone has really heard that song since. I don't know that they gave it to anybody. In the end, I don't think he was very happy with it, to be honest.
Interesting.
We made it a whole lot better.
How dare you?
But anyway, that was something that I would say was a different scenario. But in his case, Tobias' case, on that first question, I think he's fine. Question number two, Chris, what are you using?
Yeah, so I have a computer that only has the, what is it called, USB-C inputs. And they are all maxed out. But so what I've done is I've got one of those little adapter things that takes standard USB inputs, and at the end of it, I put the, what's the internet cable called? Ethernet?
Yeah, Ethernet cable.
Yeah, so the Ethernet cable goes into the end of this little adapter where I can also put in additional USB, and then I plug that into my modem. So I am doing the hard connection. That being said, I can get 1080, whatever you'd call it, broadcast signal or whatever to YouTube. I've not yet figured out how to get an HD live stream to Facebook. I know it's possible, but I don't think somewhere along the whole chain I'm not doing something correctly there, or maybe I don't have the right setup for that.
It'd probably be easier if you were just using Facebook to get that high def stream, but because you're streaming to multiple platforms at once, that might be part of your issue.
Right.
Okay. If anyone has any suggestions on that, feel free to email or call.
Oh yeah, I'd love to know.
And his last question about currently, we just pay the account holder. We have things in the works to make it so you can have multiple payees in the future. But honestly, that doesn't really solve everybody's problem, because typically what that means is they have to create an account. They have to enter in payment information. And if you're working with a lot of co-writers, there's still going to be people that don't do it. But if you've got somebody you're collaborating with, like a band or something, yes, there will be a future where you can just have the money split and go to certain payees. No timeline on that yet. Well, thanks for the email, Tobias, and I'll see you on Instagram. All right, we got one more call. Let's jump to it. This one's a little long, I will say. It maxed out the 3-minute threshold, but by that time, I think it was clear what the question was. So let's get to it.
Hello, Kevin. How are you? My name is Sean. I am a producer in New York. The Beast, and this is in regards to podcast number 228. You're familiar? How to find a producer that like won't drive you crazy or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. Yeah, so I decided to listen because of the fact that I'm a producer and I want to hear some of the things. Now, I agree with what you guys were saying with things. Absolutely. Understand that producers should be understanding. You guys have a conversation before you work and all, producer and artist. How the part about you did clear it up, but I just want to express my rant as to when you're an artist, it doesn't automatically mean that you walk away, come in with a hard drive and walk away with your entire session. And you did clarify it, but I just think all too many times, I'm a producer of many lengths, whereas as a musician, a composer, arranger, I can also record, recording engineer, mix, I can master vocal production, everything that you could think of. So the thing for me is when I work with a lot of artists, most of the time, not only 1% of the people that come in have something already and I'm just doing a recording situation. Most of the time they come in and I'm doing music from scratch. I'll sit down, I'll play and keyboard and put it together and then start the production after some pre-production is done. Now, at that point, I'm a co-songwriter because they had a melody, they had lyrics, but they didn't have any music, of which that makes it the song. So then I do that, and then I'm also recording them. I'm also housing this. So, and the thing is that the fee that I charge usually is for like the recording because they can't afford my production fees. So the thing is, most of the time, I do own the rights to the master recording because it is being housed in my studio and it is something that we're working on. And, you know, that's just how it is. Now, I would love to hear if there's any feedback that you could give or anything like that, because to me, that's how it is, because I'm doing a whole lot of stuff and they've only come in with sometimes just lyrics or half of a melody. And usually a lot of times they don't even have a bridge. So understand, like, I definitely hear what you're saying in a podcast, but I think that it's not an automatic given that an artist walks away with everything, because I also think that in the current climate that artists are, it's like a given, like it's all about them and the producer's just a hired person that, you know.
And I think that's where the call cut out. So thanks for the call, Sean. I've got thoughts. I'm sure you knew that.
I've got thoughts too.
You go first.
Okay, so he seems to be in a situation where he is advocating for his own skills and ability to get paid, which I get. he also seems like he is probably contributing more. I'm not sure that his situation falls into the scope of like what we were like warning against, because it seems like he's actually doing a co-write if he's making additional melodies and helping with verses and bridges and whatnot. And certainly if he's producing the whole track, and it's, I wasn't quite sure what he was saying about getting paid for one role, but not for the other. But if he's sort of recording this stuff for free, or like, you know, like fronting the time in order to make this stuff, I can see why he'd want to hold on to the master recordings. All that being said, I feel like if it's a collaborative creative process, the end result should also be collaborative and ownership as well. Like, so maybe you co-own the masters, or maybe you co-own the publishing, or whatever it is, if you've truly created and made this stuff together, and you've not been paid a work for hire fee for any particular one of those roles or whatever, like then that's fine. But I don't think he should necessarily be in a position to halt the distribution or exploitation in the good way of a recording of a song.
Yeah, if I'm an artist and I come to a studio and record tracks, and then that person holds them hostage, what did I just pay for? Like, what was the point of that whole thing in the first place? It did me no good, other than to maybe get some experience in a studio.
Right. Well, so then what I wasn't sure of is maybe this is a situation where the person did not pay for the studio time. Was that how he was describing it? In which case
I think he was saying the opposite, like they're paying for the studio time, but then they get there and he's having to play on the tracks. And so he's not getting paid as a session musician. He's the initial fee was like an engineering production fee, but then he's having to play, he's having to wear a lot of hats. And basically the person and write and contribute lyrics and melody, and it becomes more collaborative. And I think that's where it becomes more gray.
I also think that, I mean, maybe he does this, but it seems like the type of thing where you could have like a kind of contractors or maybe not even a contract, but an explanation of what your expectations are up front. Like if if I do this, then I want this. If I do this, then I want this. If you pay me outright for these things, then I'll relinquish claims on these things. And then, but ultimately it seems like in the end, the sound recording could be co-owned because again, if the artist is paying, I feel like the sound recording should be theirs, but maybe he just absolutely demand a split of the publishing if he's, you know, truly adding elements of the composition.
But absolutely. I totally agree with your assessment that if it becomes truly collaborative and they come in with, you know, like he's writing a bridge, a lyric and melody. Yeah, absolutely. Should get songwriting credit for that. And I don't have a problem with like what you said, sharing the master recording rights. If it feels like what I got paid does not equal the work for hire that I just did. So outside of getting the proper songwriting credits, we're going to share the master recording. I'm going to let you distribute it, but just know you owe me X percent of this recording.
Yeah, as long as that expectation is set up front, like here's how I've worked in the past, and I've ended up in a lot of situations where my client was not sort of skilled enough to flesh this out on their own. So I spent more time producing the track and adding stuff. And if it gets to that point, then I want to be, you know, either paid more outright or to have some percentage of the sound recording.
Yeah. And to me, I don't have a problem with these options as long as they are stated up front. I've seen it happen, and I know somebody who's going through it right now where the engineer, producer person feels like they're doing more work than they originally thought they were getting themselves into, and having to, then they start reacting negatively and holding master recordings hostage or expecting more payment when the assumption was the work they're being asked to do was a part of the original deal. So I think as long as it's stated up front of the options, I don't have a problem with it. It's the thing of like, no, this master recording is mine. Especially if someone went in and recorded a bunch of their songs and there wasn't like this additional, man, if I don't really help them in out here and pitch in, this thing's going to be a disaster. If they go in and a band comes in and they record and And then those master recordings should be theirs. They're hiring somebody to provide a service. That should be very clear what that service is and what the compensation is for that service.
Agreed.
I should be able to go to a studio, track whatever I want, and walk away with those tracks at the end of the day. It doesn't matter. That's the idea of a recording studio. It's a place where I can have a service provided to me. And that's my view of it. Like I said, I think there's lots of options. They just got to be presented up front ahead of the session so the artist knows what they're getting themselves into, because their intention is to walk away with something that they can use to promote themselves and build fans with. And if they don't have that, what was the point? So,
and I have never in my life worked with any engineer or producer or studio owner who has held anything. That being said, I've paid them all, and, you know, fairly promptly. So I've not gotten myself into a situation where they needed to have any leverage over me. But even that being said, when I've been working with in a new situation with a new engineer or new to me, even before I've paid them, at the end of the first day or whatever, they burn me rough mixes and either email them to me, or in the old days they'd burn a CD, give it to me, and I'd have that, you know, without them earning a cent yet. And, you know, then they'd send the invoice or whatever, and it was my time to pay them. And I don't think they would have released the individual tracks to me, the actual session files, had I not paid them. But they weren't at all stingy about being like, well, here's what we worked on so far. Here's the recording of it. Take that home as a WAV file or whatever. And
yeah,
all that being said, I've never sensed any kind of territorialism from the people I have worked with, even in the phase before I'd paid them.
Neither have I. Usually they're like, when can I get this crap off my hard drive?
Right. Can I send you your sessions? Because I got 20 projects in the next month.
Yeah, and I don't have room on my hard drive. Exactly. All right. Well, thank you for the calls and emails. You can email at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. You can call us at 360-524-2209. I appreciate a producer weighing in. I think that was good feedback, and laying out the situation from his perspective. I think that was very helpful. And if you've got questions about previous episodes or you want to weigh in on a topic, feel free. We love hearing from you, and I think it makes for good discussion. It's always interesting to hear what people are doing and how, you know, what they're encountering out there in the wild. So,
totally.
All right. Well, I think that's going to bring us to the end. Just a reminder, DIYMusicianCon.com. Go get your tickets before the end of June. I think it's June 27th, actually. I think it's the last day for $129 tickets.
I know it is, because I just proofed 3 emails on the topic.
Perfect. Perfect.
June 27th.
June 27th. It's the best $129 you'll spend on your career on the weekend of August 16th through 18th. But it'll be well worth the money. You'll be happy you did. You'll get to hang out with a bunch of crazy musicians, that being all of us, and we'll get to have a live podcast taping together and all that kind of stuff. So we will hopefully see you in Austin.
See you there.
That's gonna do it. See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.